This is Rumble Strip, good conversation that takes its time.
I was a slave here. This has been my existence for 40 years, and I can't imagine not being here. I don't know. I say I'm up here, I'm cut off, and I like it. People say, well, what are you going to do now that I'm not farming? I don't know.
That's the late Peter Dunning back in 2017. Peter Dunning's farm was a Vermont hill farm, 136 acres of forest and orchards and wet spots and steep, rocky pasture picked over by farmers for hundreds of years. The kind of place that does not lend itself to the industrial production of anything. Instead, it lends itself to the production of everything. Peter farmed mostly alone for nearly 40 years. Wives and children came and went. When I talked with him, he was getting done. The animals were gone. The farm was growing up around him. Here is Peter Dunning.
I'd grown up on a farm for whatever that was worth. I was used to animals and dairy cows. And then, you know, there was a big cultural change. And I really got into the back to the land movement. And I was a Scott Nearing admirer. And my other hero is Wendell Berry. So it was back to the land, and this was a perfect place. I just wanted to get out of the system. I didn't want to just go to work and do a meaningless job, make money and hand it over to somebody for wood and food and cars and God knows what. And the diversity is what spoke to me. As many different kinds of animals, of plants that occupy me and the farm in as many diverse ways and time of the year as possible. So you've got sheepdogs and sheep, and then you got cows and pigs, chickens. God, millions and millions of chickens. I can't tell you how many chickens. My wife and I slaughtered 25 chickens every Friday that we processed right here, put in cold water, and sold at the farmer's market the next day. God, I mean, I sold everything down there. I sold honey. I even sold black walnuts. I could take a sheep out of the barn, shoot it in the head, hang it, gut it, cut it up in my kitchen, cook it at the farmer's market, and sell lamb shish kebabs that no inspector had ever even heard of. I made a living at that. I'd make $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 a year doing sheepdog demonstrations and lamb shish kebab cookouts. Then more and more restrictions came in, and then you had to have a meat inspector had to be a federally inspected slaughterhouse, and then the label had to be, I didn't even have a label. I mean, I just wrote, you know, lamb chops. Now you have to have, you know, the weight and when it was slaughtered and where. And I never was much of a cooperator. I know there was a time when my ex-wife, she wanted kids and I didn't want any more. And she called me a chicken. And I was right. I said, no, you're going to take him away and hurt me. And that's just what happened. But I started out as an orphan. So that's the part that's always forgotten in this whole thing of the whole attachment to place, of needing a place. When I was born, my mother was there. And then she died. And I went into the foster home for money. Fortunately, I was adopted when I was six, almost seven. But I'd spent 7 years in a foster home. And, you know, they didn't give a shit about anything, you know, except for that weekly or monthly check, whatever they got. So this was important to me, the whole concept of birth and taking care of life and having a place to support life. That was it.
What's the role of death on a farm?
I mean, that's all it is life and death. It's one or the other. I mean, you're either being born or you're dying. And I don't know. It wasn't hard for me to deal with. That's all I can say. It was there were millions of dead sheep stories. What's nice about raising border collies is you could just feed the dead lambs to the border collies, and you could feed the dead border collies to the pigs. So it was always a full circle there. I was alcoholic the whole time.
The whole time of?
On this farm. I have an orchard. I made hard, I have an apple press. I made hard cider. And because I worked so hard and ate so well and was so healthy, it didn't bring me down. I mean, not till the very end. For a while I had 9 or 10 pigs that were just outside. I had a pig, Wilma, who just went for walks with me. She'd follow me around. We walked down the road to the mail. She'd follow me along. Pigs are easy, very personable, and they're very hard. I remember the first pig I killed. It was in that little black shed over there, and it was a little hard. Yeah, I remember I was out there one night, and I had pigs being born in the. The sow was eating each one of them as they came out because she was terrified. It was about 2 o'clock in the morning in the middle of winter, and I was out there in my underwear with barn boots on and trying to separate these baby pigs that hit the ground and run from the time they capable of moving, and trying to save them from the sow who was determined to eat each one. Meanwhile, on the other side of the fence, I had a ewe having triplets. That was really hectic. This is 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. I got my barn boots on, period. Yeah, there was some other disaster that same night. I can't remember what it was. Chimney fire or something. It was awful. So you wonder why you drank. I was aware that this was coming to an end, that I no longer had the market. I'd given up the farmer's market. I was getting older and older and older. I just couldn't keep up with all the work that the farm required. And I know I was just drinking more and more to sort of deaden that realization that all that I had worked for was going to be over. And it was Labor Day. It was September 6th. And I just was going down the stairs to just, you know, use the bathroom. And I can't tell you how. I just fell and hit my head at the bottom. I was up in the VA hospital for the winter. I had brain surgery and lost my right eye and spent the winter off of the farm, you know, either in the hospital or in a recovery place. And with this eye, I know I can't farm. And what do I do with 136 acres of farm that I have loved for my whole life that I now physically can't take care of the way I have? I guess dealing with getting old. I'm not being ready for that. I was always so energetic and active and capable. It takes an enormous amount of detail and knowledge of every little aspect of farming that takes a lifetime to accumulate. And it's not worth much anymore. Marshall Washer, finally. So this is Marshall Washer by Hayden Carruth. This is the last verse. No doubt Marshall's sorrow is the same as human sorrow generally, but there is this difference. To live in a doomed city, a doomed nation, a doomed world is desolating, and we are all desolated. But to live on a doomed farm is worse. It must be worse. There, the exact point of connection, gate of conversion is mind and life. The hilltop farms are going. Bottomland farms, mechanized, are all that survive as more and more developers take over northern Vermont. Values of land increase, taxes increase. Farming is an obsolete vocation while half the world goes hungry. Marshall walks his fields and woods, knowing every useful thing about them, and knowing his knowledge useless. Bulldozers, at least of the imagination, are poised to level every knoll, to strip bare every pasture. Or maybe a rich man will buy it for a summer place. Either way, the link of the manure that had seemed eternal is broken. Marshall is not young now, and though I am only 6 or 7 years his junior, I wish somehow I could buy the place merely to assure him that for these few added years it might continue, drought, flood, or depression. But I'm too ignorant, in spite of his teaching. This is more than a technocratic question. I cannot smile his quick, sly Yankee smile in sorrow, nor harden my eyes with the true granitic resistance that shaped this land. How can I learn the things that are not transmissible? Marshall knows them. He possesses them. The remnant of human worth to admire in this world, and I think to envy. I feel like I really lived my life as thoroughly as one can live. And you're just completely involved in the land. With all of it. I mean, the woods, the barns. You know, now I'm, my last job, what I'm doing right now is cleaning out the sheep from the for the last time. And I even sold my manure spreader to my friend and have to borrow it back for this last job. And I'm finding myself really uninterested in doing it. It's an end of something that I just sort of don't know how to grasp. I don't know what's going to happen to the farm. As I said, I just can't keep up with it. You can see it's all just overgrowing.
That was the late Peter Dunning of Mile Hill Farm in Springfield, Vermont. He died a year after we recorded this conversation. In this story, you heard the last verse of a poem called Marshall Washer by Vermont poet Hayden Carruth. Music for this show is by David Schulman and Quiet Life Motel. Rumblestrip is distributed on the radio by Vermont Public. If you have any comments or questions, you can contact me at rumblestripvermont@gmail.com. This is Rumblestrip. I'm Erica Heilman. Thanks a lot for listening.